Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Veterinary Advice, Animal News and Views. I'm your host, practicing veterinarian Roger Welton. A very kind good evening to you. Thank you for joining me this evening. Folks, I'm sorry about the late start. We were supposed to get going at 9 o'clock, 9:30. It had to be pushed to because of technical difficulties. It happens every now and again, and I apologize, and I thank you for those who stayed with us tonight. Hopefully we're not past your bedtime. Under normal circumstances, we typically have a low chance, a low but some chance of getting a call, a live call. Probably we've really lowered our chances by being late tonight. But just to remind you, just in case, the toll-free number, if anytime you want to call, is 1-877-878-1435, 1-877-878-1435. Again, thank you very much for tuning in late. For those of you who are more shy, always keep in mind that you can email us at comments@web-dvm.net, comments@web-dvm.net. You can comment on anything we talked about here on the show, or you can ask me a question. I really enjoy answering your questions. We have two email questions tonight. I want to address them in just a second, but I want to, if you haven't read the title of the show, just remind you we're talking about obesity tonight. Got some new insights on obesity. As we know, medicine is always evolving, and that's why we do what's called continuing education. I had mentioned in a previous episode that I attended the North American Veterinary Conference in Orlando in January. Try to do that just about every year. It's a great venue to learn the latest techniques, the latest information, the latest studies that have been published, new equipment that's out there. To update your practice, and certainly, of course, at night we like to have a little bit of fun, catch up with old classmates that we haven't seen in a long time. So it's just a great place to recharge our batteries. And one of the lectures I attended was about obesity, and I learned some really interesting insight. I learned a lot of interesting insight from a nutritional perspective, and I'm going to share that with you as we go along, not necessarily in this episode, but how our attitudes are changing, not our attitudes, but our fact base is changing just on the ever-evolving nature of canine and feline nutrition. Some of that correlates into tonight's talk, so I just want to kind of keep that out there, that I will expand on that more in future episodes because it may contradict some of the things I've said in the past, especially with regard to canine nutrition, and I will, you know, clarify as time goes on. But before we jump into the topic, we heard from Holly by email. Holly from Los Angeles, California, and as it turns out, looks like Holly was one of my first customers. Last week, I announced my holistic veterinary treatment line at drrogerholisticvet.com. Won't get into that much. I don't want to be plugging that on this show. I did dedicate a whole show to that. If you want to learn more about it, the title is Dr. Roger's Big Announcement for 2014. So be sure to listen to that. But this is about one of those products, and apparently somebody's been using it, Holly specifically, and this is what she wrote. Dear Dr. Rogers, a fan for the past year, I've enjoyed listening to how much attention you give natural and holistic healing. Naturally, I was very excited about your new holistic product line. I started my male cat, who has idiopathic cystitis, on your urinary support shoes for cats. It's only been 5 days, but I already seen improvement. Is it possible that he should have relief this soon after starting the product, or is my hope for him to get better just getting the best of me? Thanks so much for what you do. Best, Holly. So, interestingly, I've actually only sold one of those, and I guess I know who I sold it to. So, the answer to that is yes, and I'll tell you why. And I'll tell you, Holly, the benefit you're going to see, this is just the beginning. But yes, it could be helping. Idiopathic cystitis, for those of you who haven't heard about it, it's an odd disease we see most commonly in male cats aged 3 to 10 years. Essentially, they get this painful inflammation in their bladder. It often causes blood. They act as if they have an infection, but it's not an infection because antibiotics don't do anything. And I've cultured urine on these guys, actually gotten urine and cultured it and grew nothing, so it's sterile inflammation. There's no crystals, there's no stones, the bladder is just inflamed, and we don't know why. Well, one of the things we do know is that there is a stress component, exactly the physiology that we're not exactly sure of, but The reason we know there's a stress component is because there is a certain percentage of cats that will respond to anti-stress therapy. So anti-stress therapy can involve amitriptyline, which is an antidepressant, and could involve putting feel-away diffusers, pheromone diffusers that help to calm the kitty naturally by giving them pleasing pheromones to breathe or to pick up their scent. And there is, of course, tryptophan, which we know, as far as we're concerned, when we're eating Thanksgiving meals, our post-Thanksgiving meal stupor, of course, carbohydrates play a role in that, but also a big role player in that lull we feel after that meal is tryptophan. Tryptophan is an amino acid that's very prevalent in turkey. So it has a calming effect. Of course, we don't want to put our kitties in a stupor, but it certainly can have a calming effect. Now, the specific product that Holly's talking about has D-mannose in it. D-mannose is a monosaccharide molecule that it's also an osmolite, so it attracts water, so it makes the cat pee more, which in effect makes it drink more as well. So one of the things that we try to do with these cats is get them drinking more. Aside from D-mannose, we can do things like, I don't like this particular strategy, but we can put sodium in there. We can give them a higher sodium food. Sodium is salt, makes them drink more. That risks hypertension, so I don't think that's a good strategy. Others will recommend getting creative with, like, you know, water fountain type water bowls and stuff like that that will entice a cat to drink. But it's very hard to make a cat drink more because by their nature, they're not big drinkers. So supplementing with D-mannose will not cause hypertension and by itself also has anti-inflammatory properties. So it's kind of two things that can be helpful, and that is in that product. Thirdly, there's a certain percentage of cats that respond to glucosamine therapy. And glucosamine therapy, you know, we usually think joints and joint health and ligaments and tendons and things of that nature, but glucosamine has an anti-inflammatory effect in tissues, and it seems to have an anti-inflammatory effect in the bladder of felines because there is a certain percentage of cats that clinically will respond to glucosamine therapy, and we have a lot of data that proves that. The interesting thing is that I always say a certain percentage of cats because some of them will respond to one of these therapy modalities, and some will respond to multiple ones, and some it takes all three to make a difference. I would say, Holly, in your case, your cat probably has a major stress component contributing to his presentation because the soft chews that you're treating with have D-mannose, glucose, and tryptophan. Well, the D-mannose and glucosamine. The D-mannose and glucosamine are not going to provide overnight benefit. That they're going to take about 2 to 4 weeks to show a difference in most cases. So the tryptophan, on the other hand, is going to give instantaneous relief to calm the kitty, and that could be where your relief is coming from. So if there's a stress component and that already is having a significant benefit to your kitty, well, just wait 2 to 4 weeks from now when the glucosamine is really having its optimal effect, when the D-mannose is having its optimal effect, I think you could have a really comfortable kitty, and it sounds like you're on the right track. So best of luck to you. Thank you for writing to us. The next email question we'll go over in just a couple of minutes. I want to dive into our topic, which is obesity. So very interesting talk I sat through, which, you know, whenever there's a talk on obesity, lots of times I'm hearing a lot of the same stuff kind of recycled, but this one was really insightful because one of the things I commonly see in practice, and this is especially true with dogs, but it's true with cats too, really with dogs, you know, I say to the owner, you know, your dog's really overweight, we really got to do something about this, and I go through all the health problems, and, you know, we're not going to get into that today, but there's so many bad things that happen from obesity, so many things that are just preventable by just getting weight off the dog. It's so simple, but people just are so resistant to getting on board with it, and I don't understand why the difficulty, but whatever the case, one of the most common excuses I get is, well, doc, I injured my knee or I got a bad back and I can't walk him anymore. And so that's why he's blown up. Okay, well, fair enough. I can understand that. But then you got to cut back to food because you're not burning as many calories is always my answer. But back to that in just a moment. Another common one is a dog comes in limping. It's got degenerative joint disease all over its body. Every joint hurts, is creaky. Dog's only 4 years old, but it's been morbidly obese all of its life, And I say, well, you got to get weight off. And they say, well, Doc, how do we do that? He can't walk well. You can see how sore he is. How are we going to exercise him? You know, it's like this vicious cycle. Well, the answer to that is, in this study that was done on many, many, many dogs, many sizes, many breeds, many different kinds of dogs, male, female, all genders, exercise does not play that big of a role in calorie burn and weight loss in dogs. Now, is exercise good for them? Absolutely. Muscle tone, it's good for their mentation and mental fortitude and stress relief and all that good stuff. They enjoy the outside. You see a dog going for a walk, they're so happy. So I'm not saying don't exercise your dog. But listen to what this study concluded. If you walk your dog 3 miles in a day, 3 miles, your average dog will burn an additional 67 calories from that walk. Think about that. Now, I'll venture to say most people are not walking their dog 3 miles. Most people are walking their dog half a mile, a mile, 2 miles at most. Most people are not going 3 miles. So do the math. 3 miles gets you 67 calories. Hey, if you go 6 miles, you're going to burn double that. You're going to burn 134 calories. It's not all that significant because dogs are pack animals. They are designed to burn calories in a stingy fashion. They pack hunt. They need endurance. So they actually do their very best to conserve those calories. So when we exercise them and use that as a sole means to get weight off, well, there's a result. But you also can't turn around now and go to your veterinarian and say, well, I can't exercise him, I'm hurt. Or I can't exercise the dog, he's hurt. It doesn't matter. What it comes down to, realistically, is diet. Diet, diet, diet. You're overfeeding the dog. That's it. End of story. Too many calories are going in. So it really comes down to diet, and that's what this study concluded. Now, it comes to kitty cats. You know, most of us don't have the ability to walk our cats. There are a few people out there that can throw a harness on their cat and go for a walk, but it's the same thing. Because cats, they're not the same, they don't have the same protecting mechanism that dogs have. They will burn calories faster, more readily when they do exercise. But with the exception of those few cats that can be walked, you know, people say, well, he lives indoors and, you know, he doesn't exercise much. Well, I'll tell you what, folks, cats that live outdoors don't exercise much either. They exercise in quick bursts when they hunt, they have their meal, and they sleep. There's not a whole lot going on in terms of felines, and, you know, they're not jumping on treadmills. They're not roaming a great deal. And that's why I see a lot of fat cats that are indoor-outdoor cats that spend the whole day out and come in at night kind of thing. They're still obese. So the big thing with cats is diet as well. Overfeeding is part of it, but the big thing with cats is we've been feeding the wrong things for far too long, and we really got to set the record straight with that. So let's talk about diet for both species. Start with dogs. Dogs are omnivorous. I think I've been pretty consistent with that message, but where I've actually been wrong, and not necessarily to my fault because I've been going by the studies and research and information that's been available, but studies have really showed that dogs really should be eating more protein in comparison to people. They, as a percentage of their overall dietary intake, and I'll get into the whole protein deal in a future episode, probably next week or the week after. But what we're looking to do with dogs is increase their protein. So we want to be hitting like, and again, you're going to think, because if you've listened to my episodes before, you're going to think, well, you wouldn't have said that, you know, just 6 months ago, and it's true. But we want to be hitting like 28% to 34% protein, and depending on the dog, you know, that's where I'm starting to lean towards as far as feeding them properly and giving them the protein that they need. And some dogs can't tolerate it, and so what I would ask you to do is feed your dog the amount of protein that'll tolerate. So if it's causing loose stools, you need to back off the protein and maybe go with a lower protein diet. So there's no perfect diet for every dog, and I would say push the protein envelope as much as you can that your dog will tolerate and thrive with and look good with, have normal stools, have a nice looking coat, and push that level as much as you can. Previously, we'd been recommending, 18 to 24% protein, which it was satisfactory to provide their protein needs, but it left too much of the other nutrients, the fat and the carbs. And while dogs do need carbohydrates, they should not be eating simple carbohydrates. So what we're looking for with dogs is less starchy sources of carbs. So we don't want to be doing a lot of simple carbohydrates like potato, rice, grains. Overloaded with grains in moderation are fine, but we don't want to be feeding foods that are too beefed up in the grains. And we want complex whole grains if we're going to go grains. And, even better if you can find a diet with the primary carbohydrate source being vegetables, that's the ideal way to go. And that's actually the ideal way to go for people. So, high protein vegetable source carbohydrate, try to avoid starchy sources of carbohydrate. You want more complex carbohydrate. And so you just got to do your research and ask around. I'm not going to throw out brands because that's not what I'm here to do. But, that's a really good idea. And I'm going to throw out one brand when I get to the more stingy weight loss cases just because it's a prescription brand and I feel comfortable to do that, and I'll get back to that in a moment. Let's talk about cats. Now, cats don't need carbohydrate. They really don't. Do they benefit from a little bit of roughage in their diet? Yes, they do. I think that some vegetable matter is good for them. But really, you're looking physiologically to eliminate all simple carbohydrate, minimize the complex carbohydrate, and really you want just pretty much an all-protein diet. You want ultra-low carb, high protein. Look at cats as a species. When you see them live in the wild, and if you look at the creatures they're descended from, what do they eat? A bird here, a mouse there, low carbohydrate, almost zero carbohydrate in those creatures, small proteinaceous meals fed frequently. So what are we doing to these cats in a domestic environment? Well, we're loading them up with carbs. We are giving them protein, yes. Feline diets are pretty well represented in protein, but we're loading them up with carbs and we're, letting them free feed. And we really shouldn't be doing that. We should be giving them, breaking down their meals, and we all have lives to live and schedules, and, I'm not suggesting you come home and feed your cat four times a day, small, frequent meals, but at least break it up into twice-a-day feeding. Eliminate the free feeding, ideally, if you can manage that, if you don't have too many cats where it's chaotic to do that. The free feeding's bad to let them just sit there and just eat. Even if you're feeding the right stuff, too much of anything is going to make them fat, so you want to be careful with that. But ultra-low-carb, high-protein, there's a lot of brands out there. There is a diabetic diet that I really like, a prescription one, that fits that bill. I've actually gone in that direction to get weight off of cats and to manage diabetes and been successful in transitioning a lot of cats out of diabetic necessity for insulin, because 95% of cats that are diabetic are type 2 diabetics, which means that they're not necessarily insulin-dependent, and if they need insulin in the short term, there is a hopeful chance that if you get them on the right diet, get some body fat down, fix their glycemic metabolism by feeding them mostly protein, you can reverse that, gradually lower the insulin dose, and get these cats off of insulin and just make them more healthy. So let's start that from the beginning. Let's feed them the right way from the beginning. I'm not saying go prescription, but in your research, look for that ultra low carb, high protein diet. So then you got your dogs and cats, though, and they're out there. To be fair, they're out there. That no matter what you do, they just keep getting fatter and fatter and fatter. My parents have one. His name is Henry. And Henry has been on DM because they're terrified. My parents are terrified he's become diabetic. And DM is that diabetes management diet, the prescription diet I talked about that I really like for diabetics. He's been on that for a year. I just did his yearly. He's put on another 3 pounds. I mean, he's so big, he looks like a big meatball walking on his little sticks for legs. And so in his particular case, I've gone with the extreme weight loss diet, which is a new one made by Hill's, and it doesn't follow the premises that I'm talking about. It's called Hill's Metabolic. It's a prescription diet. They make it for dogs and cats. And, for the dogs also, that you're feeding the right stuff, you're feeding the right volumes, you've ruled out endocrine disease, diseases that can predispose to obesity. Really don't see those in cats, but in dogs you see those. You've done all your due diligence, yet the dog keeps getting fatter. Folks, it happens. There are some patients out there that just want to be overweight metabolically. So Hill's Metabolic is a really, really nice prescription diet. A lot of years and a lot of research went into this diet because it works very innovatively. It's not loading them up with fiber or, you know, minimizing the carbs. It's not doing any of that stuff that the more mainstream weight loss diets are doing. It's actually speeding up their basal metabolic rate. It's actually speeding up their metabolism. So it works by increasing their rate of calorie burn from a physiological standpoint. It does it in a very creative and very safe way. And I started using this stuff just about 6 months ago, and I've had phenomenal results. And so, you know, if you're doing the right stuff, you're doing the right things that we discussed with cats, you're doing the right things that I discussed for dogs, and you're not getting weight off, talk to your veterinarian about Hill's Metabolic. And I swear they're not writing me a check for that. I actually am not a big fan of pet food companies. They get on my nerves. Even the prescription ones. The prescription ones that save lives. Dealing with pet food companies is one of the bigger annoyances of my veterinary profession and career. So I'm here to make the best recommendations for my patients and for all of you, the best recommendations for your pets. So let's get into our final email, our second and final one, Sherry from Madison, Wisconsin. My cat suffers from chronic recurring bouts with herpes, viral upper respiratory infections. My veterinarian recommended supplementing his diet with L-lysine for its benefit in helping the body control feline herpes. With your experience in natural treatment, is this something worth trying, or is it, in your words, quote-unquote, snake oil? Well, when Sherry throws out the term snake oil, and that's her, she spells her name C-H-E-R-I, by the way, Sherry. She's referring to, you know, when I debunk products that make, you know, that you see on the internet that make these outrageous label claims that, you know, they can cure everything from diabetes to cancer to whatever else, it's the magical cure-all. I call these products snake oil. And I call the people or companies that promote them charlatans. So no, this is, in this case, Sherry, this is not snake oil. L-lysine is an amino acid that is extremely helpful in helping modulate the immune system to deal with herpes, because herpes is a virus that never goes away. Chickenpox is a virus, is a herpes virus. We do get it under wraps. Our immune system gets it under control after we have an outbreak as children. But later on, when we're older, senior to elderly age, immune system ain't what it used to be, and it manifests as a very painful disease called shingles. So that herpes virus never left us. It just waited for a more opportune moment to be able to overcome the immune system. And guess what? One of the treatments for shingles is L-lysine therapy. So we know it works for people against herpes viruses. It works for cats as well. For an adult, your average adult cat's going to get about 500 milligrams a day. You could split that into two doses of 250 milligrams twice a day. That's not something I'm carrying on my own product line, because there's a lot of choices out there that are very reputable and very good. There's Enafil is a really nice brand. It comes in a paste that a lot of cats will lick off your finger, and they think they're getting a treat. And they also sell soft chews that you can feed to the cats that, you know, it's always hit or miss whether a cat will eat a treat or not, but that's another way to go as well. So Sherry and Holly, thank you very much for your comments this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you, as always, for tuning in. Much appreciated. I'm going to be discussing nutrition in more detail, as I said, either next week or the week after. It depends on our triage of stories and what we're finding is most pertinent to get out there. And I just remind you of my product line. It's all natural, holistic, but a lot of clinical study and data and research behind the products that I carry. And you could peruse those at drrogerholisticvet.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great night.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.